Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. And become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. In particular, tonight's episode features a scene involving violence against animals, though they're not exactly normal animals. Listener discretion is advised. Hello there, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. As usual, I'm your host and narrator, Eric Peabody, and in tonight's episode, we'll be concluding the story Blood, Holes, and Videotape by Kevin David Anderson. This is the latest story in his Midnight Men series, covering the supernatural adventures of good old boys Earl and Dale. If you haven't yet heard the first part of this tale, I recommend listening to the previous episode of Horror Hill to get all caught up. For the rest of you, here's a quick recap. Our story opened with Dale having a very vivid dream. He's in a Blockbuster Video that is staffed entirely by female actresses. Earl is there too, but no one seems to be on Dale's side. He awakens, as the dream deteriorates, to find that Earl has brought them to a small Texas town for breakfast. Dale soon realizes that there's a boarded-up Blockbuster Video in this town, and he's drawn to it. After making their way inside, they find a strangely modern door in the back, as well as several bizarre holes in the floor, leading to darkness. As they're poking around, the police show up, and things get violent fast. In tonight's episode, we're jumping back in just as Dale has finished disabling and handcuffing one of the cops and hears two shotgun blasts and a scream from where Earl was fighting with another one. Also, special thanks again go to Olivia Steele, who voices several characters in tonight's show. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, and we can scale back some of our less savory means of generating money for the show. By the way, you wouldn't happen to still have all of your organs, would you? And now, from author Kevin David Anderson, I give you Blood, Holes, and Videotape, Part 2.
"Sit tight, asshole," Dale said, then popped up and looked for Earl's big head. Didn't take long. Earl's gaze was cast down at something Dale couldn't see. His friend did not appear to be in distress, so Dale strolled on over. As he neared, he said, "Where's the other one?" Earl looked up at his friend and pointed down.
"He done took a step too far."
Dale came next to Earl, who pointed at a third hole in the store's floor, located a few feet from a broken and no longer boarded-up window. The cop had obviously pushed his way in.
"He was halfway through the window when I got here. He took a shot at me. Missed."
"No, he didn't."
Dale gestured to Earl's arm. There were crimson streaks about the width of an earthworm running down from elbow to wrist.
"Well, crap on a cracker."
He held up his arm.
"Does it hurt?"
"It didn't, till you pointed it out,"
Earl snapped.
"Hey, I didn't shoot you."
Earl stepped over to the edge of the hole.
"No, it was this jackass. So focused on where I was, he didn't watch where he's going. He took one more shot at me, and stepped in the devil's asshole and was gone."
Earl wiped some blood from his arm, revealing three little pea-sized holes in his flesh.
"I'll live."
Dale peered into the black pit in the floor, straining to see anything beyond the darkness.
"You hear him hit the bottom?"
Earl shook his head.
"He just hollered like he knew he'd done something real stupid."
"Well, he's gonna be late for supper."
"Where's yours?"
Earl said, looking back. Dale gestured over his shoulder with his thumb.
"He's cuffed back by the entrance."
Dale turned.
"Let's go see if he can tell us anything about these holes or what's behind that door."
"Maybe what the hell that smell is,"
Earl added. They started back to the front of the store.
"I heard a shot your way. Did he get you?"
"No," Dale said. "It's always my plan A not to get shot. You, on the other hand, seem to work getting shot into your M.O.
"Not true!"
Dale looked back at his friend.
"Bullshit! A month ago in Houston with that human trafficker, you practically dared him to shoot you."
"That's because I knew it would make him mad!"
"That's what I mean!"
Dale's words choked off as a faint growl seemed to rise from the discolored Berber carpet. It coiled around them like a hungry constrictor.
"Don't suppose that's your stomach,"
Dale whispered. Earl shook his head. Dale signaled for Earl to hunker down, and they both lowered themselves below the display cases. The growl came again. It ping-ponged off the walls, making it difficult to locate. Earl pulled Betsy from its sheath as another slow, guttural growl floated from above.
"Wolf or big cat?"
Earl whispered. Dale had killed his first big cat when he was 14. A 30-pound bobcat tried to eat his hunting dog, Buck. Although Dale couldn't remember much of the fight, the growl of a big cat had never left him.
"Not a cat," Dale said.
He wasn't sure it was a wolf, but it definitely sounded canine, a low and throaty rumble that seemed to vibrate around them. It came again, and although Dale did not move any closer to identifying what they were up against, he did pick up on one thing. The growl they had just heard was coming from a different direction. He looked over at Earl and held up two fingers.
"Shit!"
Something darted past one end of the aisle, and Dale couldn't be sure, but it appeared to pop up from one of the holes. It moved on four legs and darted in and out of sight.
"No need hiding," Earl said, standing. "They know we're here."
Dale stood, drawing the machete harnessed inside his vest. Whenever he did this, he felt like a medieval knight brandishing a holy blade forged in the fire of old-fashioned virtue. But deep down, he knew he looked like a Tennessee redneck whipping out an oversized knife that seemed to be compensating for something. Compensating or not, the two large men stood back to back, each facing down one side of the aisle, ready for whatever hell was bringing. They didn't have to wait too long. Apartments.com has more pet-friendly rental listings than anywhere else. So, finding the perfect place is easier than ever, and so is finally moving in together. Just the two of you. It's a big step. Lots of new responsibilities. Lots of adjustments. Most likely, they'll wake you up at odd hours to go to the bathroom, and you'll most definitely find yourself in trouble coming home late for dinner. They might even unroll all your toilet paper next time. It's just what happens when you two find a new place together, but you're not doing it because you feel like it. No, you're doing it because you love them, because they're family. And that's why Apartments.com has the most pet-friendly rental listings on the internet, so that you and your furry family can find the perfect new place together. Apartments.com, the place to find a pet-friendly place.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Dale smelled them coming before they appeared. The aroma of decay was pungent, curling his nostril hairs and stinging his eyes. A few yards away, the four-legged creature stepped into their aisle, and Dale met its black eyes sunken in its ferocious skull. It had once been a dog. He couldn't tell the breed. Shepherd, wolfhound, something big. Identification was difficult due to its rotting flesh, maggots squirming in its torn fur and exposed meat. Earl's back was up against Dale's, and he suspected his friend was looking at something equally as ugly.
"What you got on your side?" Dale said over his shoulder. "Dead dog. You?"
"Same."
"Any tips on how to deal?"
"Standard rules apply," Dale said.
"Damn," Earl grumbled. "I really need to study those."
The decaying canine, which, when alive, might have weighed 70 pounds, glared at Dale, seemingly sizing him up. He figured the one on Earl's side was doing the same. Dale twirled the machete, loosening his wrist up as his adrenaline pulsed, his temples throbbing. He studied the creature for points of attack, exposed bone that would break easily if he had to use his hands.
"What the hell are they waiting for, Christmas?" Earl said.
What are they waiting for? Dale thought. They seem to be holding positions like pack animals when they hunt. The comparison hit Dale like ice water to the face, waking him to the realization that they were looking in the wrong direction.
"Incoming!"
Dale heard the claws coming up and over from the center of the adjacent aisle. He turned just in time to see a third dead canine bound into the air from the top of the display case. Dale thrust his hands toward the airborne creature, connecting hard. He pushed it in flight, deflecting the decaying mass of teeth and claws, changing its intended trajectory. Unfortunately, he'd inadvertently deflected it toward the back of his friend. The dead dog landed on Earl's shoulders, its body wrapping around him like an old lady's winter shawl. Earl's big hand reached up fast and grabbed it by the scruff of its decaying neck. His fingers sunk into the fur and around several exposed vertebrae. Earl lifted it up and hurled it into the dead dog charging at him from the other end of the aisle. Dale could hear the other dog on his end of the aisle now bearing down on him. He spun to face it, then had an idea. He reached over with his free hand and grabbed the top of the display cases marked Action and Adventure. He had noticed earlier that the cases were about 6 feet long, and although butted up against one another, they were free-moving. When the undead beast entered the case's shadow, Dale pulled it over. The dog tried to stop and hit reverse, but it was too late. The case rained down VHS boxes with images of Stallone, Schwarzenegger, and Jean-Claude Van Damme, followed by the full weight of the wooden display case. For the moment, it was pinned to the floor, its front legs and snarling snout sticking out from underneath. It squirmed and twisted and made some progress trying to extract itself, until Dale brought a boot down on its neck with the force of a blacksmith dropping an anvil. With it pinned once again, Dale swung the machete. With one chop, he had cut the front half of its skull, including the lower jaw, clean off. Separated from the rest of itself, the creature's muzzle and teeth snapped a few more times. Then, like the rest of its body, it lay still. "Stay!" Dale removed his boot. "Good boy." Doing an about-face, he saw two dead dogs charging at Earl. The lead dog had two of Earl's throwing knives in it, one in the neck and the other between two exposed ribs. A third knife protruded from the second dog's eye socket. That wound seemed to hit the mark, and its massive St. Bernard-sized body careened into the display case, sending Steven Seagal's entire 90s catalog to the dust-covered Berber carpet. Since he had already dispatched one dog, Dale felt justified in making the executive decision to deal with the heavily wounded one. He stepped toward it as Earl let his final throwing blade fly. It sunk into the breast of the lead dog, possibly once a Doberman. With three knives sticking out of it like a pincushion, it charged at Earl. Dale smelled it as it went by, making its way toward Earl. Behind him, Dale could hear the thumping sound of Betsy repeatedly going in and out of the Doberman's decaying body cavity. It yelped in anguish as Dale raised his machete to bring it down on the wounded St. Bernard-sized skull. Before he could strike, the undead canine not only righted itself, but reared up on its hind legs like a bear. In an instant, Dale realized that in the split second he took to choose between the two dogs, he had chosen poorly. Not as wounded as it appeared to be, the grisly creature lunged, its exposed ribs broken and jagged, looking like a massive set of teeth reaching out from its body cavity. The decay seemed to be most prevalent across its midsection, and Dale decided, well, he hoped, that was a weak spot. He hunkered down on one knee and swung the machete laterally with everything he had, a lumberjack executing his best swing. The blade powered through rotting flesh, severed the spine below the ribs, and came out the other side. For a moment, the creature was still, just swaying in the wind that was not there. Then, the bottom half teetered back and the top half tumbled forward like a massive redwood, its front legs outstretched branches coming down on Dale's shoulders. It seemed for a moment they were slow dance partners, the dog's front legs hugging the back of his neck and the rotting lips coming in for a kiss.
"Bad dog!"
Dale shouted as a snout full of teeth came within inches of his nose. He twisted his body to the left, twirling the top half of the creature to the floor. It rolled to right itself, but with only two legs to work with, it just teetered back and forth, teeth snapping. Dale used both hands like someone splitting logs for kindling and brought the machete down. The blade cut straight through its mouth and didn't stop until it sunk into the carpet. Dale twisted the blade until the top half of its skull separated. A rotting tongue twisted out from underneath the liberated section of the skull until Earl brought his boot down on the whole kit and caboodle. With the sound of crushing bone came stillness in all things formerly undead canines.
Jesus, Dale said, resting a forearm on his knee.
Earl put a hand on his shoulder.
You gonna make it?
Dale turned to look up at his friend.
I'm fine, but you're gonna need stitches. Shit,
Earl said, looking at the 7-inch gash in his forearm.
I ain't gonna turn into a zombie dog, is I?
Not unless you were a dog before.
Or a regular walking dead flesh-eating thing?
Dale shook his head.
Nope.
He kicked the carcass.
This is not viral. It's a spell. What makes you figure that?
There were 3 of them. Exactly 3. 3 holes, 3 dogs.
I ain't following.
3 is one of those enchanted numbers the Hocus Pocus folks often use in their doings. Dale knelt and examined the rotting dog. I ain't never seen him before, but I think these 3 dogs were drafted by the deplorable Hocus Pocus types into service in the underworld.
So some black magic a-holes made man's best friends into...
Hellhounds, Dale said.
Hellhounds,
Earl said.
Ain't that like mythology or something?
Dale reached over and grabbed the St. Bernard's head and lifted it. Yes and no, I suppose. I do know that they shouldn't be up here above ground. They're in service down below. They start to rot if they spend too much time on the surface.
Say you're right,
Earl said.
What in the brisket are hellhounds doing in an abandoned Blockbuster video store?
Almost like an answer to Earl's question, the floor started to rumble. The building shook, windows cracked, and several ceiling tiles came loose, their fiberboard construction crumbling as they hit display cases. Before either of them could say anything, it started to subside. A few beats later, the world was still again.
An earthquake in Texas,
Earl said. Before Dale could respond, a distant alarm sounded. They both looked around, trying to find where it came from. The sound seemed to echo like a distant scream in a catacomb of crypts. Dale turned to the one place they had not been yet.
It's got to be coming from the other side of that door. Now I got more questions,
Earl said. Dale had questions too, but before he went barging into the unknown, he thought it best to use his resources. He turned back to the front of the store. Let's go see what our prisoner can tell us.
You mean that one?
Earl said, pointing at a hobbled figure moving through the establishment like Quasimodo trying to outrun the king's guards.
God damn it, Dale grunted. Knew I should have hogtied that sonbitch.
With his own cuffs keeping his hands behind his back, the cop moved in obvious pain. Hunched forward, he staggered and then careened into the checkout counter.
Well, you done did a piss-poor job of making him our prisoner,
Earl stated the obvious. Dale sighed.
Yep, that's on me, but I got distracted, heard that scream and thought you were in trouble. Aw, that's sweet,
Earl said.
Stupid, but sweet. And I don't scream, I holler. Only girls scream.
True enough.
Wonder where he's off to,
Earl said.
The exit's the other way.
Dale wondered that as well. The cop's haphazard shambling gave the impression that he was just confused and not sure which way he was headed. But as he careened into an adjacent display case, Dale believed he had run into it purposely, in an attempt to steady himself. It was at that moment Dale realized his direction was intentional.
Think I know where he's heading.
Dale started to pursue, just as another tremor hit. This one was a mite stronger, and Dale had to steady himself by grabbing Earl's shoulder. That wasn't the best move, as Earl was teetering backwards. It came and went as fast as the previous one, but the hesitation it had caused gave the cop time to reach his destination. Before the two men got moving again, a tinny female voice crackled to life.
Officer Gates, come in.
It took Dale a second to realize the distant and muffled voice was coming from the cop's walkie-talkie.
Officer Gates, please respond.
With the cop's hands secure behind his back, there would be no response or coming in. But that just made whoever was on the other side more insistent.
Gates, pick up!
Dale had not been in a big hurry to catch the cop, seeing how he was heading to a heavily secured door and had no real use of his digits. But when he saw the cop reach the door and stand in front of the control panel on the right side of the door, he quickened his step. The screen and a circular lens mechanism came to life. There was a flash of light, and the mechanism spun a half turn like a photographer focusing a telephoto lens. A lens aimed at the cop's face. Then, as fast as lightning, the door slid open. "Shit," Dale said as he went from a fast walk to a run, but even as he did, he knew he wouldn't get there before the cop went in. The alarm became louder, no longer muffled by the door, but not loud enough to drown out the cop's insistent walkie-talkie friend.
"Gates, if you don't get it open in the next few minutes, that whole building is coming down. Gates!"
The muffled voice faded as the cop moved inside. Before the door slid closed, Dale got a quick peek. Something large covered most of the ground, raised a bit, metallic and circular. Lights flicked inside, like the yellow illumination from a construction crew or emergency vehicle, and just before the door slid shut, Dale saw a figure, either sitting in a chair or hunched up against the back wall. It was a male teen, and Dale couldn't be positive because the door closed so quickly, but it looked like he had been chained to the wall. They reached the door and started looking for a way in.
"How do you open it?" Earl said.
"Biometrics," Dale said, running his fingertips on the door, checking for a gap.
"Biome what?"
"Scanned his face," Dale yelled over his shoulder. "Pull a rod out of one of those display cases." Earl pushed the ROM-COM display case over and slammed a boot into its spine. VHS cases tumbled everywhere. Sleepless in Seattle and Pretty Woman hit the back of Dale's boots. Dale gave the tapes a soft kick so they wouldn't be underfoot. "Pardon me, Mrs. Roberts, Mrs. Ryan," he said as Earl tossed a metal rod ripped from the now shattered display case. A thin gap between the door and frame allowed Dale to drive the metal rod in. He pushed until convinced it couldn't go in any further, then began to use it like a crowbar to ease the door back. When there was an opening big enough for Earl to get his fingers in, the door started sliding. The stress sounds made it clear that they were exceeding the door's warranty through general misuse. Metal screeched in protest as the rollers tore from their rails, and Earl lifted the door, forcing it back into the wall pocket. Dale jammed the metal rod into the grooves, dashing any inclinations the door might have of closing on them. With the door open, the alarm was much louder. Dale stepped through first. It was a square room, 20 feet across. The boy, maybe 14, was dressed for Sunday service, nice button-down shirt and slacks, hair groomed, and hands manacled to the wall. He stood still and, other than the chains, didn't appear in any kind of distress. Drugged, maybe. Dale was about to step across the room toward him when the room's centerpiece caught his eye.
"What the hell is this?"
Earl said, eyeing the same sight. In the center of the room, slightly raised off the ground, was a round metal iris-like door. The door was 10 feet across and closed. Earl and Dale stood on one side, and the boy was chained on the other.
"Jesus," Dale said. "It's covering an opening in the ground?"
Earl pointed at the enormous metal iris.
"Don't suppose this is the kind of thing they put on them sinkholes, is it?"
Dale met Earl's gaze.
"No."
From behind and to the right, something moved. Dale turned to see the cop in the corner behind them, fumbling at a control panel. The flashing yellow lights made it difficult to see what he was doing, but with his hands secured behind him, Dale figured that whatever it was, he was doing it badly. He pecked at the buttons with his nose like a rat hitting the control to drop a food pellet. Dale pointed at the boy.
"Go free him. I'll see what our friend is up to."
Earl started circling around while Dale moved toward the cop. The cop pecked one more time, then leaned down and stuck his chin under a very large toggle switch. It looked like an electrical switch from a Frankenstein movie. He moved the toggle part enough to wedge a good part of his face under, and in what Dale had to admit was a stellar effort, managed to flip the switch up 90 degrees. Instantly, a mechanical whirring sounded as motors came to life. Dale spun around and saw the iris blades move. There was a groaning that evoked a sense of mass and weight as the sharp blades slid open, lightning fast. The airtight seal broke with a hiss, and the device came to a sudden rest, reaching its fully open position with a locking thud. Dale had the feeling that a giant eye had awakened, and the room had suddenly become something else. The alarm went silent, and Dale heard the cop laugh behind him, followed by, "You're going to die." Without looking, Dale threw his elbow back fast, catching the cop in the mouth. The cuffed man fell back into the wall and slumped to the ground, his broken nose listing to one side.
"Dad!"
the teen boy shouted.
"Dad!"
Earl repeated as he yanked one of the chains free from the drywall. An awful realization poured over Dale like ice water.
Shit.
He knelt and tore the cop's shirt open. He pulled the Velcro strap off one shoulder and opened the Kevlar vest like a book. With his machete, he cut the sweat-soaked t-shirt down the middle to expose the man's chest. And there it was. The flesh talisman.
Son of a bitch.
It had been burned into his chest willingly, a circular-shaped brand with an Egyptian ankh rising from the ancient bloodsucker's temple, surrounded by a river of crimson. Dale couldn't see all that detail through the man's chest hair, but this wasn't the first time he'd seen such a mark, and his recall could fill in the covered features. Dale hoped it wouldn't be there, that this asshole didn't bow down before them and pledge loyalty. But the chained boy on the other side of the room calling him Dad telegraphed what he'd find. Actually looking was just a formality.
"What's going on over there?"
Earl said, yanking the other chain from the wall.
"We should get out of here," Dale said. "Why?"
Dale peered into the hole in the center of the room.
"Something's on its way, and I'd rather face it outside in the daylight than in here. Get that kid out of here."
Earl moved toward the kid, but he scurried away, the chains dragging behind him.
"I need to stay,"
the boy shouted. He ran around the hole toward the cop.
"Dad, I need to stay, right?"
"That's right."
The cop sat up a little straighter.
"Stay here. It's your time, my son."
Dale turned back and slammed a boot into his face, cracking the man's jaw. The boy stopped, halfway between Dale and Earl.
"Why are you doing this?"
"Earl, grab him."
The boy spun around and ran back toward Earl. Earl reached for him, but the kid was fast. He juked like a running back, easily moving around the big man and reaching the other side of the opening in the ground.
"We don't have time for this," Dale said.
The boy stopped on the far side of the hole and pointed to himself.
"I'm for her. I'm supposed to be here. I'm for her."
"What's he on about?"
Earl said. Dale moved around one side of the circle, hoping to grab the kid. The boy moved back toward Earl, ran around him again, and kept moving. Earl pursued halfway around and then appeared to get winded. He stopped by the unconscious cop, bent forward, and put his hands on his knees. Dale stopped on the other side.
"You winded already?"
"It's been a busy morning,"
Earl huffed. Dale realized that this kid could keep them running around the hole for hours.
"Listen, kid," Dale said. "I don't know what your dad told you, but this is not your time."
"It is my time," he shouted.
Dale held up his hand.
"No, it's not. Your dad has betrayed you, your mom, your whole family. He's made you a part of something you have no business being a part of, and it's going to tear you asunder if you don't get gone."
A sound like a distant tornado echoed inside the hole.
"You lie. My dad loves me. That's why I'm here," he shouted. "You're the ones not supposed to be here."
"Shit,"
Dale muttered. They were out of time. Dale felt they needed to go, maybe try and convince it to come outside, but they couldn't leave the kid in here with it. He knew how that was going to end.
"Okay, partner," he yelled over at Earl. "Heads up, this is one of those ancient cockholes I told you about."
"No shit?"
"No shit,"
I'm hoping it's just one. They're faster, stronger, and I don't know what all else. Here's the play.
I'm listening.
I'm gonna get its attention. Keep it focused on me.
How you gonna do that?
I don't know. Engage it in conversation. Compliment its hair. You know, chit-chat. While its eyes are on me, you hit it from behind. Go low. Target the spine. I'll go high to take out the head.
Don't hurt her!
The boy shouted. Earl pointed at the kid.
What about Spunky here?
If we live, we'll deal with him later.
Dale stepped toward the edge and peered in, immediately wishing he hadn't. The blackness swirled. It was like gazing down at the top of a hurricane. Something glinted in the distance, rising from the storm's eye. Within moments, a humanoid figure appeared, churning in the chasm. It rose quickly, but slowed as it neared the opening, lingering just under the breach in the floor as if a thin layer of ice kept it at bay. Dale could see the features in its female face. Her burning eyes met Dale's gaze with an expression of surprise. Not the face she was expecting. The boy ran to the edge and thrust a hand downward.
I'm here for you!
The figure started to rise. Her head, covered in wavy, cocaine-white shoulder-length locks, rose above the opened iris door. Ash-colored skin with deep fissures ran along its neck and cheekbones like grotesque varicose veins. It grinned at the boy with yellow fangs and hungry crimson eyes. The ancient creature rose further.
Hey!
Dale shouted. It turned toward Dale slowly as its neck and shoulders cleared the iris. Its colorful garment looked like something the ancient Persian women wore, elaborate seams coming together in a low V neckline, revealing some ribs and a bony collar that no one needed to see. Her eyes bore into Dale like fingers covered in needles. He stiffened and fought off the sensation, which was slightly more irritating than painful.
Anyone ever tell you you look like Betty White?
Its head tilted slightly as its thin waist cleared the iris. Her jaw dropped a bit as if she were about to reply. Dale felt a twinge of victory as his part of the plan, getting her attention with some chit-chat, had come to fruition. But before it could speak, the creature suddenly jolted as if hit by electricity. An unexpected expression melted across its face. Unexpected by Dale, and certainly unexpected by Betty White's ancient doppelganger corpse. The expression was a mix of surprise, fear, and anguish. It was then that Dale noticed she wasn't rising anymore, and a sound, a familiar sound, had echoed in the room. Metal sliding on metal, followed by a thud as blades locked into place. He refocused his gaze and realized that the iris had closed. Dale looked over at Earl, who had just taken his hand off the giant Frankenstein's toggle. His friend shrugged.
I liked your plan and all. Just seemed overly complicated.
No!
Screamed the boy. The ancient bloodsucker, well, the top half of the ancient bloodsucker, fell forward onto the now closed metal iris door. Its bottom half fell back to wherever it had come from. Dale smiled at his friend.
How is you go low, I'll go high complicated?
Earl waved his hand.
Too many details. You always overcomplicate things, Dale.
Dale had to give it to Earl. His simplicity had reduced their problems by half, maybe even more so, judging by how the thing twitched helplessly.
To be honest, I do like your solution, Dale said,
gazing at the ancient blood drinker squirming like a rodent crushed on the highway. Back snapped, but not dead.
You'll pay for this,
the boy said through tears.
Jesus Christ,
Earl said.
The kid's pop had him chained to a wall as a snack for this loose sack of fangs, but we're the assholes.
Earl stepped toward the boy fast, but instead of reaching for him and missing this time, he scooped the chains off the ground. He yanked the chains and pulled the kid to his feet, spun him, and forced him to look at the blood drinker.
You know what this thing was gonna do to you, Earl said.
The kid slumped.
She was gonna make my family great, one of the ruling clans in the New America.
Dale shook his head, then slammed his boot down on the creature's neck, not hard enough to break bone, but enough to hold it to the metal floor.
Get the kid out of here!
Earl yanked the chains and dragged him in the direction of the exit, like a fat dog that most definitely didn't want to go for a walk. Earl pushed him to the door. The kid paused in the doorway, then Earl kicked him hard in the rear.
Get on home, boy!
He fell forward and out of sight, chains dragging behind him. The sound of clanking metal faded as he moved to the exit, but before they dissipated completely, the kid shouted,
They're coming, and you're gonna die! You will all die!
Earl stared into the store, making sure the kid left. When it seemed like he was satisfied that the kid was out of the store, he turned back to Dale.
Poor mixed-up kid.
Yeah, he's gonna need a couple trailers full of therapy, Dale said.
Earl snapped his fingers.
You think he's got that, what do you call it? Stockton syndrome.
Dale raised an eyebrow.
What?
No, that ain't it,
Earl muttered to himself.
Maybe it's Sacramento syndrome?
I think you mean Stockholm syndrome, Dale said.
No, that doesn't sound right neither.
Dale sighed, then bent forward and hacked off one of the creature's forearms right at the elbow. It howled, eyes flaring red.
Stockholm, Stockholm, Earl said. Is that up there by Toronto?
Dale rolled his eyes, then hacked off the other forearm.
Bit further east.
He hooked a boot under the torso and flipped it over, face up. The eyes that had burned so brightly were fading, like a lamb dangling in a slaughterhouse. Earl stepped closer.
I don't think your comparison to Betty White was all that respectful.
Dale reached down and seized a fistful of the thing's pale locks.
I was just trying to get her attention.
Dale lifted what remained of the creature off the ground and held it up.
I meant no offense to Ms. White.
Just 'cause she was up there in years when she passed is not a reason to compare her to this vile piece of trash,
Earl said.
Damn woman was a national treasure.
Fair enough,
Dale said, stepping over toward the cop.
If I ever see Ms. White's ghost, I will promptly apologize for my ill-targeted dispersion.
Earl folded his arms.
She'll probably kick your ass.
Probably.
Dale arrived at the cop huddled on the ground. He gazed down at the fear in the man's eyes.
Sorry, but your son isn't gonna die today. You're welcome.
Dale paused, holding the dying thing over him.
As for you...
Dale dropped the creature into the cop's lap. It tried to scurry with all the grace of a two-legged spider, its fangs hovering over the cop's jugular. The cop's eyes met Dale's.
Please, please.
It was good enough for your son, Dale said.
The creature bit, tearing the man's neck open.
Hey, good buddy,
Earl said.
You think we might be overcorrecting here?
Nope.
All right, then.
Earl's stomach growled loud enough to be heard over the dying screams of the soon-to-be former cop.
You ready for second breakfast?
I could eat.
While Dale made a call to people he constantly swore he'd never talk to again, Earl took care of the cleanup details. First, he removed the ancient bloodsucker off the cop, then used Betsy to remove its head and heart. The heartless, headless torso flopped about, a bit like a trout yanked up onto shore by the hook in its mouth. Earl made quick use of a lighter and set it ablaze. He kicked the flaming hunk of rot onto the metal iris door where it continued to cook for a spell, then dissolved into tissue paper-thin tussles of ash. He then fetched a plastic bag from the store's checkout counter and deposited the heart and the head, eyes open, pupils staring, into the dusty bag. With the remains of the Ancient One sitting tight inside the blockbuster bag, Earl stepped over to the control panel the cop had used to open the iris. With one hand, he snapped the toggling switch sideways, breaking the handle clean off. He then wedged Betsy between the wall and the control panel and cut it from its perch. He followed it with a boot heel, which smashed it so completely that even MacGyver couldn't find anything useful in the pile of debris. As Dale was finishing up his call, he did a similar thing with the biometrics panel on the outside of the room.
"It's none of your damn business how I come to be here!"
Dale yelled, smashing the outside control panel under his boot.
"Just attempting to get a complete picture,"
Zelda said in a voice that slithered all kinds of sideways.
"Are you still having the dreams? Visions?"
"Nope, that all stopped when I quit you,"
Dale lied.
"If you must know, we found this place because of Earl's stomach. It growled, we pulled over. End of story."
"We have known each other longer than you will ever know, Dale. Don't you think you owe me some truth?"
"I don't work for you no more, and I owe you shit," Dale said. "You coming to secure this situation or am I wasting my dime?"
"They are already en route. Better get out there unless you want a full involuntary debriefing from Captain Major."
"We're gone,"
Dale said, signing off without saying goodbye. There was no point in saying goodbye to Zelda. All their interactions seemed to be a piece of a continuing conversation with no end in sight. Earl was hunched over the dead cop when Dale said,
"Earl, it's time to skedaddle."
With two fingers, Earl closed the dead man's eyes and stood.
"What's the rush? We're already late."
Dale moved into the former video rental store.
"If we don't get ass in seat in the next few minutes, we might have to spend the night."
"Assholes are coming?"
Dale nodded.
"En route."
"Shit,"
Earl said as they moved through the store and headed for the exit. Dispatching the hellhounds hadn't improved their smell none, and Dale put a hand over his breathing holes as he stepped over canine remains. As he did so, he wondered how the council would deal with this place or this little Texas town that had certainly made a deal with the devil.
"They give you any insight into what the hell's going on here?"
Earl said. Dale stepped through the exit.
As usual, Zelda asked more questions than gave answers, but she did say that this answers the question how they've been making their way back to the New World. She still calls it that.
"How so?"
Earl said as they moved across the store's weed-infested parking lot.
"Remember I told you the Founding Fathers chased them back to hidey holes in the Middle East?"
"Yeah, ancient, Mesopotamia.
Mesopotamia. Anyhow, the council has been watching, waiting for them to pop their heads up, assuming they'd migrate as before on the surface.
But now they got an underground route.
Some call it a hellmouth, but yeah, they do."
"Huh,"
Earl said, turning back around as he walked. He gazed back at the store.
"So a hellmouth opened up and these dang fools built a blockbuster over it?"
Several of the townsfolk, Consuela included, stood on the sidewalks, watching them stroll up the street.
"I spec the video store was there first, and they built that back room round it when it opened."
"How's something like that open up?"
Earl said, turning back around, the plastic bag slapping his thigh.
"Don't know. Maybe the fracking and sinkhole stories weren't just stories," Dale said. "Either way, what came through convinced these folks they were in the presence of gods."
Earl seemed to notice the growing number of citizens lining the street.
"They don't look all small-town friendly no more."
Dale delivered a hard stare at some of the larger men who seemed ready to start something. He was pretty sure that some were armed. It was a fair assumption, this being Texas. Before they got any stupid notions, Dale thought he'd nip it in the bud. "Hand me our souvenirs." Dale took the bag from Earl, then strolled to the town's main intersection. He stood in the middle while Earl continued to the truck. Dale opened the bag and peeked inside.
"Hey, darling, ready to meet your flock?"
He reached inside and palmed her now bare scalp, then lifted her head from the plastic. In the late morning sun, her eyes flickered like dying fluorescent bulbs. Before her lights blinked out forever, he held the head up, face out, at eye level. There were a few gasps, hands covering mouths. Dale glared at Consuela, whose hands had gone from resting defiantly on her hips to covering her chest as she took a step back. Under his fingertips, Dale felt the temperature rise, and he knew that meant the pyrotechnics were about to start. He dropped the head to the pavement at his feet. He let it sit there for a beat, giving his audience a moment to watch the smoke start to drift up from its scalp. When he felt the moment was right, he gave it a kick. Not hard enough to put it through the goalposts, but just enough to roll it to the first down marker. As the ancient head rolled, it burst into blue and white flames. When it came to rest, Dale could see that its mouth was open. The townsfolk couldn't hear its silent scream, but based on the look in their eyes, Dale knew they were imagining it.
"They are not gods," Dale said as he walked in a half circle, meeting as many eyes as he could. "Y'all got conned, and I understand it's a good con. They promise wealth, power, a return to the good old days, maybe even a seat next to them at the table when they're running the show. I get it, I do. But it ain't real. None of it." Dale found the boy standing in the crowd, peeking out from behind an adult woman with similar features, his chains dangling at his feet. "But you know what is real?" He pointed at the kid with his machete. "Your kids are real. Your community is real. What you built here before these monsters came is real. Do yourself a favor and get back to that, because that's all you really need." Dale took a breath and let that sink in. "But if you don't, and you think you deserve more, well, let me tell you about something else that's real." Dale reached inside the bag again, seized the heart, then let the bag fall to the ground. He held the fleshy mass of decaying muscle out for all to see. He tapped his chest with the tip of the machete and continued. "I am real." He let the heart fall, and as it descended, it burst into flames. A 3,000-degree tornado of blue flames spiraled upward, belt buckle high as the life energy of 1,000 children returned to the world. With a hard stare, Dale said, "Don't you dare make me come back here." He wanted to add something with a bit of whimsy, like, "The breakfast burritos ain't that good." But since this was more of a put the fear of God into them moment, he thought it best if he left it right there. Besides, the only one he knew that appreciated his sense of whimsy was Earl, who was busy starting up the truck. Right on cue, as if they had rehearsed it, Earl pulled forward toward the intersection. An opening appeared in the circle of residents around Dale, as it naturally tended to do when a 20,000-pound Peterbilt truck comes a-knockin'. The semi came to a stop with a hiss, less than an end zone width from where Dale had given what he hoped was an inspirational halftime speech. A little bit of fear, a little bit of hope, no sugarcoating. Dale wasn't sure how well he'd been heard, but he was sure he didn't want to stick around and find out. He glanced down at the heart and, like the skull, it was dissolving into ash in the morning sun. He stepped away and jumped into the passenger seat of the Peterbilt, then gave Earl a nod. Earl put it in gear and headed for the door, in this case the door being the freeway with no stops for sightseeing. As the town shrank in the side view mirror, Earl said,
"I had no idea that public speaking was in your wheelhouse."
"Me either."
"Think maybe you should run for something."
"Public office?"
"Sure, I got your slogan right here. Don't piss him off, vote for Dale."
"What am I running for?" Without missing a beat, Earl said,
"Head jackass, of course."
Dale smiled.
"Only if you serve as my vice jackass."
Earl grinned.
"It'd be my honor."
"Enough nonsense," Dale said. "We got trailers to look at." Just then, Earl's stomach growled like a cougar in heat. The big man patted his belly.
"I really do think it's time for second breakfast."
Dale glared at Earl. "I ain't hungry no more."
"Look right here."
Earl pointed to a billboard with a big picture of scrambled eggs, bacon, a stack of buttered toast, and a steaming cup of coffee.
"Next exit, 8 miles. We'll be in and out. Promise."
Dale knew the billboard was speaking directly to Earl's stomach, but it was saying something different to Dale. Like the one Earl had described earlier, this one too had been peppered with buckshot, and to most that meant that some teenager had gotten a hold of their daddy's shotgun, engaging in a round of 70-mile-an-hour target practice. But the holes scattered across the fried eggs and Texas toast meant something more to Dale. They reminded him that he'd never get away.
He'd never get away from Zelda and her ilk. He'd never get away from the dreams or visions, or whatever the hell they were that gave him peeks behind doors that should stay closed. Zelda had said to him once that he could step away from the darkness, but the darkness never steps away from you. She was full of ditties like that. "Keep driving, Earl," Dale said, folding his arms. "I've seen enough holes for one day." You've been listening to Blood, Holes, and Videotape, Part 2, by Kevin David Anderson. Besides being the creator of Earl and Dale, The Midnight Men, Kevin David Anderson has penned stories in over 100 publications. His debut novel, Night of the Living Trekkies, was named one of the top 5 zombie novels of 2010 by The Washington Post. His latest book, Night Sounds, From Podcast to Print, features many of Kevin's stories heard right here on the Horror Hill podcast, and many others such as the No Sleep podcast, Pseudopod, the Drabblecast, and Otis Gyre's Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Night Sounds also features an introduction by my friend and yours, Jason Hill. If you'd like to meet Kevin, he'll be hanging out at StokerCon in San Diego and selling his books at Midsummer Scream in Long Beach this summer. Well, my friends, that concludes Earl and Dale's latest adventure. This was actually my introduction to the series, and I'm definitely eager for more. If you're finding yourself in the same situation, a number of other Midnight Men stories have been featured previously on Horror Hill. Rotten to the Core was featured in Season 2, Episode 15, Tangled Webs in Season 3, Episode 5, Werewolf School in Season 3, Episode 24 to Season 4, Episode 1, All Trucked Up in Season 4, Episodes 11 and 12, and The Art of the Diesel in Season 5, Episodes 3 and 4. And hey, if we're lucky, maybe we'll get some fresh ones to feature on future episodes. I'd like to thank Kevin David Anderson again for such an entertaining tale, and also thank Olivia Steele for her wonderful and varied character work over these 2 episodes. I'll be back next week with some more scary stories for you, so be sure to check back at the same day and time. Until next week, listeners, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted and narrated by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Original music provided by Eric Peabody and Nikki McSorley. Finalization by Eric Peabody and Craig Groshek. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at natalie@chillingtalesfordarknights.com to have your work considered for future production. Seeing as how we're all living in a technological nightmare of our own devising, I'll ask you to follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. Not only will you have appeased the dark gods of cyberspace, but you'll be kept in the loop as we prepare more terrifying content. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend becoming a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Otis Gyre's Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, Paul J. McSorley's Fear from the Heartland, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. As for me personally, I'm on most social media as Viking Guitar or Viking Guitar Productions. I'm always on the lookout for new stories to narrate and new music projects to mix or master. If that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out and we can talk turkey. Also, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over.
Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.